supporter of Hillary Clinton, Moses Ross, and a supporter of Bernie Sanders, Keisha Thomas, will join us and discuss their candidates' ideas. That's this Tuesday at 8 a.m. on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO, Portland.
Cable Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 26th annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 5th through March 5th. Most of the films will screen at Portland Community College Cascade Campus, and two films will show at the Hollywood Theater. The five-week-long festival of feature and documentary films come from all over the African continent and include Thursday evening documentary screenings, Family Film Day, and Women Filmmakers Week, held during the first week of March in celebration of Women's History Month. Again, that's 26th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, playing Thursday through Saturday until March 5th. Most of the films will screen at Portland Community College Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street, in the Arts and Humanities Building in Room 104. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, this is Labor Radio. I'm Lane Ponce, your co-host with...
Michael Morrow. The other co-host.
And we have two very exciting guest speakers this evening. We have, they're working on some Portland State University graduate education people. They are trying to form a union. They have been successful so far. And we have some announcements before we go into interviewing with them. Michael, what announcements do you have for us this evening?
We have two announcements. Some of our listeners may not be familiar with the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association. There is such an association. It is Alaska and Washington and Oregon, and they have an annual conference every third year. It comes to the Portland area, and this is the third year.
I think it's Vancouver, British Columbia, or all of British Columbia. I don't know about Alaska.
Okay, maybe not Alaska.
I think British Columbia. We're international.
There you go. So for those who are interested, the PNLHA conference will be May 20th to 22nd at Portland State University, which is nice because we have folks here from Portland State University. If you're interested, it happens over 3 days at PSU, end of May. You can check this out at the website, which is pnlha.org. So log in there, find out about the conference. There are wonderful workshops, interesting information on labor history.
Useful. And they have entered into the 21st century. You now can register online and pay online. This is new this year, so we're kind of excited about that. We have some young people joining us, and they seem to have a real corner on that media process, and so they've built in a really nice website for us.
They do. And in keeping with the PSU theme, we have a request from an instructor over at PSU to make an announcement about this Sunday, March 6th, from 11 to 1 at the AFL-CIO Union Hall, 3645 Southeast 32nd, which is at 32nd and Division. There's going to be a meeting, and the title of it is Fighting the New Attack on Oregon Workers. Those who are familiar with Justice Scalia's passing understand that we now have a Supreme Court that's divided 4-4. And so one particularly nasty piece of legislation, the Friedrichs case from California, is now not going to be resettled by the Supreme Court because it appears that there will be a 4-4 vote, which means that that decision goes back to the district court, which sided with, reasonably enough, unions. So this particular piece of legislation, this is nasty stuff. It's right to work legislation. Right to work, as many of us know, is a misnomer and has been since 1947. Taft-Hartley outlawed something called a closed shop, which meant you had to join the union to get a job. You have not had to do that since 1947. So right to work is not really right to work. It is right to freeload. It is allowing people to not pay union dues, even though they have the benefits of the contracts that are bargained by their union. We may have people walking around asking you to sign initiative petitions talking about the right to work. You already have a right to work. This is all about union busting. So please, if you're interested in what might be coming down the pike, Sunday, 11 o'clock, AFL-CIO Hall, 3645 Southeast 32nd here in Portland. You can also check out, they have a Facebook page. It is called Fighting the New Attack on Oregon Workers. So check out the Facebook page. And one of the wonderful things about union movements in the U.S. now is while they're waning among the private sector, they are flourishing among the public sector.
Right.
So we have two, hopefully soon, members of a public sector union. As those of you who are following the news know, the Portland State graduate students have decided that they need a union. And so we have two representatives from that group here tonight to talk about that process. So tell us who they are.
We are introducing Jane Carr and Andrew McCandless.
You got it.
Did I do okay with the name?
That was perfect.
Good. And they are both organizing the graduate students at Portland State University. So let's hear how your experience is going. Why don't we start with you, Jane? How have you had experience organizing before, and tell us about what your experience is now?
Well, I come to this work with very little organizing experience, little to none, actually, and I've really enjoyed and been inspired by and learned so much from working together with my fellow organizing committee members and my fellow graduate employees. So we've been spending the last several months in an intensive drive, having one-on-one conversations with as many of the about 800 to 850 graduate employees that are going to be part of our bargaining unit at Portland State, and having these one-on-one conversations to learn what their work is like, what issues are for them, what they would wish to see more in their workplace and their work environment, and what they feel they could be contributing to PSU if they had more resources and support to do so. So that's been part of that effort, and really been we're quite involved in a very exciting stage right now.
And so, Jane, tell us what you're doing at PSU.
I'm a PhD student in public affairs and policy, and my graduate employment is as an instructor in the civic leadership minor at PSU. So that means I teach one class per term, so three times a year, and I'm the full instructor of that course. So I design the syllabus based on my knowledge of the field. I design the assignments based on my knowledge of higher education pedagogy, and I run classes entirely unsupervised. My name is on the course listing, and it's really my class. To my knowledge, there's little to no kind of oversight over that. So I really do feel like I have that ownership.
And is civic engagement actually a department at PSU?
It's not a department. We have a minor that's under the Division of Public Administration.
Ah, perfect.
Mm-hmm. And Andrew, tell us what your experiences have been in the past and now.
In terms of organizing?
Mm-hmm.
Last year was the beginning of any sort of organizing experience for me. I came in, I'm in a PhD program in Earth, Environment, and Society. I'm a coastal marine biologist. And back in November of 2015, I met with some people in my department who had heard from some other people that there was interest in forming a union. And so got in as much on the ground floor as I could, going around, as Jane was saying, visiting people in their offices, having as many conversations as we could over the last year and a half.
And what do you do at PSU now, as far as more than being a student? You're also doing what?
Oh, sure. So I've been I guess we use TA, sort of teaching assistant, sort of broadly. As Jane was just saying, she actually teaches her own course. My experience has been instructing a laboratory section. So for introductory environmental science classes, there are typically laboratory sections that are associated with that. And so I would teach 2 3-hour classes a week that were supplementary to the lecture periods.
And you're also there by yourself, and it's a class that you're running on your own?
That's correct.
Right. So, are you paid as much as a normal faculty at PSU?
Well, it's interesting, actually, because our situation sits in a somewhat complex situation, is that we are paid very differently across the university. In my department, we're paid at a 30% what a full-time starting employee would be paid for teaching one class. Across the university, for instance, in the World Languages and Literatures department, they're paid as a 49% time. Of course, not wanting to hit that 50% because then they would be needing to be given health insurance and other benefits. So they're given 49% of a full-time equivalency to teach two full classes. So even a much heavier workload, I would say, than I have. And some of us across the university are paid up to 45% to teach one class. So it really depends on how your department is able to or chooses to fund its teaching assistants. Additionally, there are some departments, especially those funded more heavily through grants, where the graduate assistants are paid much closer to a living wage than others.
So the apparent arbitrary treatment of grad assistants might be something that got people talking to each other about maybe the need to join together, become Absolutely. Part of a union, and then bargain a contract that's fair to everybody.
I think that more than that, if you begin looking at what may be an average, and that's very difficult to determine what that average might be. So it's sort of anecdotal, talking to graduate TAs. But let's say, for instance, we're somewhere in the middle of the pack at $15,000 a year as your stipend. Unfortunately, most of us also have to pay for our healthcare, which we frequently get through the university. And we also pay a number of fees to the university. I worked this out for myself for the first time a few nights ago. And I found that at the end of the year, after taking out my fees and health insurance that I had to pay for, my take home was under $12,000. Actually, excuse me, it was a little over $10,000, which is below the poverty wage for Oregon.
So what Andrew's referring to, too, is that us graduate employees, those of us who are going to be in this bargaining unit, by definition, we are paying to have a job. So we pay hundreds of dollars per term and hundreds more for health, for our own health care, for those fees and that health insurance. And so saying that we have, say that we're earning 30% full-time equivalency or 40% for our work, a lot of that gets eaten out by these fees and health care.
And as the regular listeners to this show know, I'm a retired Portland Community College employee, and we at the community college level, part-time instructors, adjunct instructors, teach about three-quarters of the courses. I know when we get to the big schools, the four-year schools, the number of career track full-time professors is steadily declining. The number of adjuncts teaching courses is going up, and the use of graduate students to do a lot of the work that used to be done by full-time tenure track faculty is also changing. So you folks are basically being utilized to do many of the things that 20, 30, 40 years ago regular full-time faculty would be doing. So interestingly enough, as an AFT member for now 25 years, AFT was one of the organizations that you are working with as you are pulling yourself together. You're attempting to do some kind of a joint organization with AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, and AAUP. How's that working out?
It's working out really well. We're receiving very gratefully support in the form of full-time staff organizers. This arrangement kind of dates back to fall 2014, where there had been several small groups across campus who had been attempting to form a campus-wide union. But around fall 2014, it was decided by AFT and AAUP membership that there was enough momentum and energy around this, and they decided to allocate resources in the form of largely a staff support. And that was very instrumental and continues to be very supportive to us. And yeah.
So Michael indicated that AFT stands for American Federation of Teachers, and AAUP stands for
the American Association of University Professors.
Okay.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe your full-time faculty is represented by AAUP and your part-timers by AFT.
That is correct.
Yeah. Yeah. And additionally, just for interest, the graduate units at the University of Oregon and Oregon State are much larger, I'm not sure why, but are much larger than PSUs. And both of those units are represented by AFT, American Federation of Teachers. And I actually, in the 80s, was part of the organizing of the University of Oregon's graduate students as an AFT local. So
thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And the history, because you were a graduate student.
Because I was a graduate student.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. They laid the groundwork for you guys.
Absolutely.
So are you working with those two unions that are already established?
We have been. There have been members of both unions at OSU and U of O up here in Portland on numerous occasions. They've supported us in door-to-door drives. They've supported us in events that we've held for our membership and helped educate us and our fellow grad employees on what life can be like on the other side.
Mm-hmm. We had a forum just a few weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, that was attended by over 70 graduate workers, middle of the week, which is wonderful that people were interested enough to take the time to come out. And it was supported by graduate workers from other schools who were able to answer questions about what they've won in their bargaining over the years and how they've responded to challenges that they've had on campus.
You are listening to KBOO, and we have two guest speakers this evening. We have Jane Carr and Andrew McCandless, and they are talking to us about their organizing efforts at Portland State University for the graduate students who are apparently living in poverty. So we it's very interesting to know that the university is saving money on your expense. Mm-hmm. So does the union seem to be an area that will help you equalize that a little more, or how do you think that's going to work out?
We're optimistic and hopeful that it will. As we were talking about, our fellow union members at the other Oregon public universities have seen really positive increases in their benefits, their compensation, their healthcare coverage, things that are really important to us and we feel like are going to allow us to do the quality focused work that we want to do in our teaching and research.
So the process is at this point you have enough interest and you are doing what used to be known as the card check, where people are signing cards that say, yes, I want to join a union. And when you get to a certain percentage of potential members who have signed that, then you're off to the races. And then you can start thinking about actually bargaining a contract. So how's that feeling? Where are you in that process?
It feels fantastic. So we've had tremendous support. We began before what you've called the card check. We drafted a mission statement over this past summer after hundreds of visits, one-on-one conversations with other graduate workers, listening to their stories, hearing what their interests were and their feelings about unionizing. Following the drafting of that mission statement, we began collecting signatures on that statement, so making sure that graduate workers were both interested in unionizing and felt that the way that we were defining it was what they were comfortable with and what they were interested in. And we've actually already had signatures by over half of our bargaining unit on that mission statement.
Excellent. So you're rolling along. The school calendar is interesting. Mm-hmm. For most students, it goes, because we're on quarters, fall, winter, spring, and we're now much of the way through winter term. So we have spring term, and then people start thinking about warm weather and going somewhere else for the summer. So what is that going to do to your organizing to have things sort of take a little dip in the summer and then crank up again in the fall?
It's a major factor for us when we plan out our strategy for when we want to have met certain benchmarks and deadlines. Hopefully summer break for us will just be a relaxing time of celebration because we will have met our benchmarks and goals easily this spring.
Nice.
Okay. What are some of those goals that you've reached? Can you discuss that with us at this point?
Well, as Andrew said, we have over half of the support of our our bargaining unit through a mission statement. And so we're in an authorization card drive this time that's going pretty well. It's pretty much on schedule.
Mm-hmm. And it's about going out and continuing to reach out to the students, the workers that we still haven't managed to speak with. Such an important part of this process is developing the relationships that we wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to develop. So we can be very siloed within the university, within our departments, but not just that, even within individual labs. You'd see the same four individuals maybe that go to the same computer lab that you go to, that sit in the same windowless room with you, and you don't ever get the opportunity to see what other workers are experiencing. And this is a tremendous opportunity for that.
That's an interesting challenge that you have, in that most of you are insulated from many of the other folks who'll be part of your bargaining unit. Mm-hmm. And there's a second one that I think you may have had discussions with the other GTFs from the U of O and OSU about, and that is the fact that you are sort of involuntarily term limited. Ideally, you are at the school for a fixed period of time. You do your work, you write your dissertation, and then you're gone. The ability to retain people over a long period of time, and have some sense of the history of your organization, that's a challenge. So have you thought about that and how you might deal with that?
We've begun to think about that, yes, and we've had some input from some of our colleagues at these other unions we've been working with. What we've been hearing is just how important relationship building is, how important shared leadership is. And to me, that's actually a really exciting challenge, because we need to create a culture of trusting one another, of saying, hey, you're new this term, but maybe you're interested in getting involved. Maybe you're not just interested in doing some grunt work, but maybe taking some leadership roles. And so we really need to become an organization that is inclusive and puts people out into the work that really matters to us.
I really enjoy the social aspect as well, and seeing the union as part of our identity as workers at the university. It, again, is sort of an antidote to this, the ways in which we're sectioned off into our departments and divided from each other.
Your image of siloed, that's go into that a little bit. When you say you're siloed into different areas, what would be the opposite of that in your mind?
Frankly, our union meetings would be the opposite of that. So, I was borrowing this image of silos from some people who analyze problems with governmental agencies, where it's difficult for them to talk to each other because everybody operates inclusively and there aren't very many connections between those groups. But for me, when I go to our meetings, I'm sitting around a table with computer scientists and philosophers and artists and urban planners and coastal marine scientists looking at seagrass like me, and we all get to have a conversation about our lives and our experiences.
And healthcare.
And health.
And benefits and wages.
And car drives.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. That sounds very good.
You know, a useful way to think about this, for those who have seen the movie Norma Rae, and if you haven't, see the movie. Norma Rae takes place in the South in a textile mill. And what you have there is a huge barn with a lot of people working, making whatever it is they're making, but basically everybody who is potentially a member of that local sees everybody else every day. So they are 200 or 300 or 400 or 500 people who all work together and have lunch together and see each other. Folks who are in graduate students, probably see other graduate students but don't know who they are. You may be in the cafeteria with folks, or you may be, but other than the few people, as Andrew mentioned, that you work with on a close basis, you just don't know who the rest of the folks are who are, dealing with the same kinds of issues that you're dealing with, trying to get by every day and pay for your health care. And a lot of my experience is a lot of grad students are parents and trying to make that mm-hmm. work at the same time. I don't know if either of you mm-hmm. are parents, but, so many issues that coming together and forming a group that can then deal with those issues as a solid group rather than an individual mm-hmm. is vital. So I'm just delighted that you're doing this.
Thank you for that. It's been really, really important to me personally to be part of this effort for these reasons you were just talking about, is having the sense of solidarity, learning what it feels like to be part of a group effort when it's not necessarily structurally natural for us to be this group. Like you said, we're passing each other. We don't necessarily know that this person may have a common interest, or that she may have a daughter, or she may be on food stamps, and they're all doing the same work that you are, but that by sitting down together and having conversations about our lives and our circumstances, it's taught me how important it is to be forthright, to build relationships, and to talk about things that in our society are not necessarily things we're supposed to talk about, such as our wages and our benefits. But how important it is to talk about these things and realize that being compensated in the way that we are, not very abundantly, it doesn't have to really get into your skin and really give you that message that your work doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's really important to me to share that with my fellow grad employees. Our work does matter, and we're in graduate school, many of us, because we want to be part of societal change that matters to us. And our work in graduate school is valuable and valued, even if our wages are in the few hundred dollars a month kind of category.
And your students probably concur with that. I'm sure that they value your efforts at being there and giving them insights in your topics.
I hope so. Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's something that we come up against is this notion of what it means to be a student when we think about what the identity of student is versus the identity of worker. And graduate workers are an interesting amalgamation, an interesting mixture of this. Frequently, when we think of students, we think about the choices that are being made, and we are in many ways expected to view our labor, the work that we do, as a gift that's being given to us. We are given the right to work in a different context than what you were talking about earlier. But when you begin looking at who graduate students and graduate workers are, it paints somewhat of a different picture from what someone might imagine a college student is. For instance, the average age of a master's degree student is, I think, 31 or 32 years old. The average age of a PhD student is 35. There are, I think, 60% mm-hmm. are women, mm-hmm. which means, again, with the age, that means many people with families. That means people, in their middle 30s who are not maybe this 19-year-old student that we think of when we think about college. Mm-hmm.
And good points. For me, this is an interesting training ground for you folks, you young folks, because when you do get ready to leave, when you finish, when you move on, when you hopefully get a job, probably at a different institution, you will move into an institution where more than likely you'll become an adjunct, and so many of those institutions have active unions that are protecting their adjuncts and their full-time employees as well. So the what you're learning now and the training you're getting will come in very handy down the road as you proceed with your higher education careers.
You obviously are no longer inexperienced organizers, and we welcome you to the fold.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Thank you.
Yeah. Quickly, we've just got about a minute left. What's your relationship at this point, and it will probably be changing, with administration?
So far, it's been a productive relationship. The university administration has agreed to be neutral, respecting our legal right to form this union, and has directed all faculty and staff what our rights are in organizing.
Are you feeling support from full-time faculty, part-time faculty?
Absolutely. Faculty support, I was blown away by the faculty support, both full-time and part-time.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, Michael and I are both members of the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association, and we would personally like to invite you to our conference in May, because you would add a new element to our history, for sure, your history in the making. And we're very pleased that you came and joined us this evening.
Yes,
thank you. We'd love to be there.
We will be watching to see how things go over at PSU.
Right.
Thank you. And thank you both.
Oh, thank you for your work. It seems like a very valuable commodity for all the people that you speak for. So thank you, and we'll be closing down for the evening. And be sure and tune in next week for Labor Radio.
And we will see you Memorial Day.
Yep, fifth Monday comes up on Memorial Day, and we'll be back with you then. Thank you again.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Cable Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Mayoral Candidate Forum on Social Justice, March 10th at 6:30 p.m. at Maranatha Church in Portland. The forum will be a public conversation with leading mayoral candidates about social justice issues in our community. The program will be moderated by Israel Bayer of Street Roots, Joanne Hardesty of the NAACP Portland Branch, and Jason Renault of the Mental Health Association of Portland. Again, that's the Mayoral Candidate Forum on Social Justice, Thursday, March 10th at 6:30 p.m. at Maranatha Church, 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Carlos Chavez, and you're listening to a brand new podcast titled Profiles. Profiles is a radio project focusing on the topic of criminalization, the process from which people and behaviors are transformed into crime and criminals in our communities. Zero tolerance policies, school to prison pipeline, the warehousing of human